please consider calling into the show today. We have a number of hot topics, and your voice needs to be heard. Thoughts, Love, and Reflections is your opportunity to make sure your opinion is heard over the noise of the media. James T. Deshaies is committed to bringing the voice of the people to the world stage. He'll select topics, but your voice will be the focus. So take time to spend with him and inform the world of your views. We can no longer sit back and let others tell us what to think. The cost of being a silent majority is too great, and too many lives are being destroyed. The leaders around the world need to be put on notice that their jobs and careers depend on how well they listen. Call in on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 657-383-0309, or Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 347-855-8867, or Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 657-383-0309. Why don't you add Thoughts, Love, and Reflections to your weekly schedule? If you have story ideas or topics of discussion, contact James Deshaies at 407-394-9819 or email djames82@aol.com.
This is your host, James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We're trying to get a few things under control here.
I'm gonna dance the night away.
What you gonna do, Audrey? Let me hear you. Go on and sing it for us, Audrey.
No, thank you. I thought you were trying to get some things straight. Thank you very much.
No. I think we do for a concert. I thought you told me I was never gonna catch you again. So go ahead and go on and give us that concert right quick.
I will be happy to pass. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. You know, this is your host, James T. Deshaies, of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections. And we're here on Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. I am having a few issues. Looks like my music on the side is not available to me. I'm not sure what's going on, but we're going to have a nice conversation anyway. I want to just share with you guys, and I'd like for you to tell me what your thoughts are. I know this is a very controversial thing, and when I say controversial, our country has gone through a time when euthanasia was just looked down on in a terrible way. But in Belgium, we have the first child has died because of euthanasia. So not only do they allow the adults to decide to take their own lives, children are given the option as well. And so here we are in a situation where we just want to have a conversation. Now, just before we have our conversation, I look at it and it says Washington allows for euthanasia, Oregon, California, Vermont, New Mexico, and Montana is going through the process. And so, you know, for me, euthanasia means that a person has gotten to the point where they've received some bad news and are possibly being told that whatever they're going through is incurable, and they just don't want to go through the pain and the process of continuing to live. you know, I have never been in a lot of pain. I mean, I've been in some pain where I've had back pain and I've had some pain, and they were excruciating. But I believed and I hoped that I was going to overcome those pains and I'd get back to normal. And so I've never been in a dire situation where I knew my life was coming to an end. So it's kind of easy for me to talk about what I'll do and what I wouldn't do. But, you know, does a person have the right to come to the conclusion that it is in the best interest of their existence to end their lives? So that's the question. And not only that, do we want to get to the point where we give that option to children as well? You know, what you know, I know that from a religious standpoint, and you all can correct me if I'm wrong, we're not supposed to commit suicide. It's a sin that's the one of the deadliest that you cannot ask for forgiveness. So are we to the point where we are going to just allow euthanasia to become commonplace and allow it to be something that we extend to our children? And we're going to let our singer for today, Audrey, you're going to have to do, during the breaks, you're going to have to do the music, because my music is not there. So.
Yeah, you would love that, wouldn't you? We would love to have that opportunity, but we'll pass on it. But in reference to your question on the serious side, that is truly a serious condition to be in, and Scripture do instruct us to not commit murder. Therefore, we can't designate the time of our death. Scripture tells us that no man knows the time. But, you know, I've witnessed families having to be in a situation where they have to determine if they want to continue to have their family member on life support. And, you know, that's a very serious situation to be in. It really is. And at that point, you just have to pray, and the prayer is for the Lord just to intervene, you know, so that people won't have to make that decision, because as difficult as it is, you know, sometimes people let you know what their wishes are, but, you know, I just don't know if I could make that decision for anyone. I just don't know. I would just have to be in prayer, and that's why some of our siblings, when they're making their wills and that kind of stuff, they know which person to ask to do what, because, you know, their wishes may not necessarily line up with our thoughts and our beliefs and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. It's a struggle. I can only put myself in that place if, you know, my child was constantly in pain. And, you know, any child that we have, we will always want to take their burden, their pain, especially when they're very young, when they can't even speak for themselves. But even children, you know, you go to the children's hospital, and especially those who have cancer, and my heart just goes out. And I do know that the Lord strengthens the parents to go through. He would never take any of us through anything that we can't bear. So I can't really answer that question, James. I think that one has to be up to the individual at that time, and I would just pray that the Lord would direct and guide them and strengthen them to make a decision.
I have to say that I have twice been asked by medical people about whether or not I wanted to allow my parents, and it certainly was something that I couldn't do. And what I meant by that was, they asked me if they were to be, I guess, were they supposed to do life-saving methods on them if their heart stopped beating. And I just informed them that I was just of the mindset that you live as long as you can live, and I just didn't think it was appropriate for me to let them go You know, that had to be something they would have to decide. And so, I understand that for me it would be difficult for me to let someone go unless they had told me. But when we're talking about the actual person being talking to you and saying they want to select the day that they want to die, Kathy, what are your thoughts on euthanasia? What do you think about a person deciding for themselves what day and time they're going to leave this earth?
I don't have any comments on that. Everything that Audrey just said, I 100% agree with her, so I really don't have any comments on that.
Okay. Regina, what are your thoughts?
Well, when I first saw the headline that said euthanasia, the first thing came to my mind was the fact that animals, dogs, cats, where there's an abundance of them, are euthanized if they are not adopted out of animal shelters. And then when I, scanned over the headline more and saw that it was a human being, let alone a child, I was very surprised that's what they called it. They actually call it euthanasia, but what it is physician's assisted suicide, and that's the definition that they're giving. It will be very, 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 very hard for me to allow that if my child, and I'm saying my child because in the article it states that this was a 17-year-old. He was close to 18, but he still had to have his parents' permission. He didn't have to have his parents' permission if he were 18, but he was 17. And I just don't believe that I could give permission to my daughter to have a euthanization performed on her. If she wants to stop eating, if she wants to stop taking her food intravenously or something like that, that wouldn't be my call. But something that would be my call, I don't think I'd be able to do it. Somehow his parents found the strength to do it. They did say that it was an incurable disease. But I just don't know if I can do that.
Well, you know, it is definitely something that when you love someone or you have the kind of love that, you have the kind of relationship with someone that you don't want them to ever leave you, it is a hard thing to do to make a conscious decision to put that person's life, bring that person's life to an end. And I know that... again, being that I've lost both my mother and father, that there are people who go through situations where people are in extreme pain or they may not be living the kind of life they want to live, where they've been very active and somehow or another they become very inactive or paralyzed. And so there are a lot of different forms of life that some people don't want to live. And then there's some forms of life where people prosper. I know for myself that presently I have all my senses. And sometimes I think about whether, what senses would I be willing to let go. And I could not imagine, some of the things that some of these people go through when they find themselves unable to use their bodies, or their bodies are full of pain, and they just want to come to an end. When I think about life and life and death, I think of it as life as a transition. I don't think life ends, but you make a transition, and we don't know what that transition is to. We want to believe that we know. We want to have faith that we know, but it is a scary transition. I think no matter what your faith is, because you've only known life, and to accept death when you've only known life has to be a pretty hard thing to do. What do you think, Audrey?
Yes, absolutely. It's very difficult. I mean, all of us are I think, in agreement or saying that we're in the same place. And I would just have to say, again, I would just have to have prayer and pray for that person or pray for myself if I was put in that situation. I do know that I'm blessed to have my mother, 97, and we've had several situations where it was very close calls. And, you know, people say at that age we should be thankful, and we are, of the number of years that she's here, and people in the medical field the same. But, you know, when doctors, you know, say, you know, well, she's in her 90s, you know, she's 97, she lived a good life and that kind of stuff. You know, my point of it is still, I don't care how old she is, go ahead and do whatever it is that you need to do. And I can remember one time specifically where she experienced a stroke and a heart attack at the same time. And it was in the emergency room, and we had to just make some quick decisions. She was, at that time, she was here visiting from Mississippi. And, of course, I'm thinking, you know, well, contact a doctor in Mississippi and get a record. And this is what I'm telling the doctor. And he had to tell me, no, you don't understand. I need for you to make a decision now. I don't have time to do all of that. And my response was, you do all that you can do. You do your very best. And I just said, the Lord will do the rest. And I just had to just believe that that was the case. And it's a very difficult. And I say all that to say that we all know about the 70 years of promise, but we also know that we are human, and we never want anyone to leave us. My point of it is, no matter what age, my point of it is you do anything and everything you can for a person, and that's inclusive of whatever medical condition they may be in, as far as it being terminal. You know, like Regina, I believe it was Regina that said that, you know, if the child make the decision himself, or the a person make the decision themselves to, again, start altering some things, not taking the medication and refusing to eat and that type of thing like that. That's another thing, but that's not us making that decision on behalf of that other person. We have to account for every choice that we make. The other night we were talking about consequences and the choices that we make, and that I would just say we would have to make sure that we're ready to answer for that one.
You know, there's a saying, you know, only the good die young. And I just, you know, what I've come to understand about that as I've gone to, you know, I'm 56, and you say only the good die young, is because no matter how old someone is, if you love them and you care about them, you don't want them to leave. You know, it don't matter how old they are, it's too early. And so it is just a fact that I can remember with my grandfather, I just couldn't wait. I wanted him to get to be over 100. And he had had a long life, and he had lived without his wife for many, many, many years, and was unmarried at the time, and had been unmarried for 30 or 40 years. I don't know exactly. But all I wanted was for him to live to be 100 so I could call Good Morning America. I can't remember what show it was. They used to highlight the people who lived over 100, and it wasn't me asking him, well, Granddaddy, do you want to live to be 100? You know, all your friends are gone, everybody you knew who were your age is gone. You know, what are your thoughts? It's just that you don't want them to go, you don't want them to transition, but at some point in time, I'm sure living gets to be harder than just letting go. And so none of us know that, because we're still young, and I tell people, if I could buy some time, I take my money and buy it, you know. But of course, you can't buy it. I enjoy life, and so I don't know if I would ever get to the point where I would welcome the transition. But I know for now that I know that life is priceless, and you want those that you love to live forever. Regina, what do you think?
I totally agree with everything that's being said. This coming Thanksgiving, my aunt, my grandmother's sister, will be 102. And we, the family, constantly look forward to Thanksgiving and being there with her. And even when times would get sort of rough, she always wanted a particular quality of life. And we strive to give her that quality of life. But we don't want to see her, you know, go. And we would never do anything that would alter, you know, how she's living now, because what she's doing now is keeping her viable. So that's just something that I can't imagine. But now, on the other side, it says that this person was in extreme pain, was living with pain daily, But again, it would not be a decision that I would want to make. I wouldn't want anybody to live in pain like that. But if they wanted to make that decision on their own, I wouldn't make the decision. But it's not a decision that I would make. I just wouldn't do it.
And I understand exactly what you mean. You know, to be in a position where you are going to determine the day and time somebody is going to leave you has to be, I know for me it was, I didn't want any part of it, you know, you know, they tried to make it terrible. I mean, when they explained it to me, they said to me, you know, your mother is such and such an age. You don't want some big old man pressing down on her chest you know, possibly crushing her ribs. And, you know, they really tried to make it awful, you know, that, you know, bringing her back would be so awful, so it's excruciating that, you know, you should avoid it by saying, you know, don't give her respiration. And so, but my thoughts were if you are on the verge of dying, you want every chance or opportunity to live that you can get. And so that is an opportunity to live, and you want that opportunity. So that pain would be something you would don't mind going through. So, you know, I told them that I couldn't make that decision for either my father or my mother, that I wanted them to have every opportunity to breathe as many days as they possibly could. But a lot of times you don't know what those people are doing in, behind those closed doors when they're supposed to be doing what your requests are, you know. But I just know that was a decision I made. And it is difficult to see these people who have to make these choices for themselves in real time, where they say to people or say to their doctor, you know, I want to die Tuesday at 12 o'clock. Oh, wow, that just would be unreal for me. Well,
yeah, that's
you think
almost
that's like
that's almost like an execution, you know, when people who are death row and then they get their designated time and date and all, it's just, you know, it's tough. That's just really tough. I just just pray that I never have to be placed in that decision, in that position to make that decision.
Now, do you think it should be extended, or that policy in Belgium, like, is extended to children?
No, I mean, children are human beings just as anyone, and I just don't think that. I just don't think that it's, I don't know. I can't say. I just don't know. I mean, really, it is. I just don't know, because, again, I can only imagine seeing a child, you know, just desperately in pain, just, oh, my goodness, I can't even imagine their eyes looking at me and just, you know, help me, and, oh, my goodness, I don't know. Just thank you, Jesus, that I haven't had to be in that position, and I pray that he don't allow me to have to experience that.
And I think you're right. I think it's something that we all want to avoid because it just doesn't seem it's not the kind of thing that we want to experience or have to do to a loved one.
Isn't that very similar to, and I think we've already touched on it, I know one of my best friends of over 30 years has me as the person who will decide whether or not she will remain on life support and all of that stuff. And I said, now, why in the world did you put that on me? Why do I have to do that? And she said, because she knew that I was the only one who would carry out her wishes. And I said, you know, you put me in a pretty, pretty precarious situation, because your family's going to want to do what they want to do, but I know what it is that you want done, and they're going to be upset with me. But that, it puts me in a position of determining somebody's date of death.
And that's
I don't like
and you're,
it.
And you're not a family member?
No, I'm not a family member. We've been friends since we were 14 years old.
Well, I tell you what, I would not want a friend to ask me to do that.
It's written. It is written. It's documented. Yes, told us that. I don't like having that position. And so she was a smoker. She was a smoker, and every time she would start smoking, I'd tell her, I said, "All right, now, I'm not ready to make any decisions on your life or death. So you need to put those cigarettes down." You know, we kind of make light of it, but that's a serious,
right.
That's a serious decision.
Yeah, I know you're exactly right. It is difficult to be in a position where you have to make life or death choices, because there is no greater choice I think you have to make for people. I mean, there's nothing more decisive than a life or death choice.
And you always wonder, what if? What if? What if? You know, what if that miracle occurs? But in the case of the euthanasia, I guess that young man wasn't wondering what if. He was just focused on the pain that was in his body right then at that time.
Yeah, I understand. That's true. You have, you know, if you have pain going through your body, you cannot deal with.
Making rational decisions.
Right.
Uh-uh. Not at all.
And that's the only thing that you know in life, you know, isn't it interesting? It's the only thing in life you know you can't avoid. You got to deal with it. It has to be something everybody deals with. Life, you know, that's the other side of the coin. No matter how long you live or how short you live, you have to deal with death as a result because you had life. So once you have life, then it's established that you have to die, or someone you love is going to die.
But it's a whole different decision when they. I wonder, do you guys think that the person is who makes that decision to end their life through physician's assisted suicide? Do you think that they're being self? Do you think they're cheating you?
I think that sometimes when you don't know what is going through their mind, that they could be being selfish. I know that some people, when maybe they're not trying hard enough, or their family might feel like they have an opportunity to beat cancer or to beat whatever it is that they're going through, but they don't have the mindset or the strength to go through it, that might be what the issue may be. And then you might say that that person is being selfish.
And not thinking about the people they're leaving behind.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break, guys. I want to share with you a new product that just came I produced, and someone helped me with it, and I'd like to know what you all think about it.
I am this woman that has set the expectations of the world to take my rightful place among the stars. The woman that does not use the traditional roadmaps to a given place, but create my own destination. I am this woman that maintain her intrinsic beauty in ways not determined by others' thoughts, but by my own sense of uniqueness, my own desire of sexiness and allure. I am this woman designed by my creator to scale the height of the unbounded, allowing my talents to be seen by the masses while inspiring those yet to dream to greatness. I am the mother of the world, deserving the respect of all that walk under the gravity of the earth, igniting the love that exists in all men, while being the birthplace of the future.
I am this woman. I am this woman that ascends the expectation of the world to take my rightful place among the stars. The woman who does not use the traditional roadmaps to a given place, but creates my own destination.
I am this woman that maintains her intrinsic beauty in ways not determined by others' thoughts, but by my own sense of uniqueness, my own desire of sexiness and allure.
I am this woman designed by my creator to scale the height of the unbounded, allowing my talents to be seen by the masses while inspiring those to dream.
I am the woman of the world, deserving the respect of all that walk under the gravity of the earth.
Igniting the love that exists in all men, while being the birthplace of the future.
I am this woman.
Officer Andre. Miss Audrey, are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
Did you hear your voice?
I did hear my voice. I recognize it. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to tell you, you had a permanent part. I think your voice and the picture, if I'm not mistaken, was that, whose picture was that with your voice?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't recognize it until just now. I didn't recognize it.
Oh, okay, you didn't recognize it? Okay. I think your picture was with, what was the poet's name who just passed a few years ago?
Maya Angelou.
Your voice was with Maya Angelou, and so you got a prominent part there. And so, yeah, you need to go back and look at that. I'm very proud of that. I didn't make that decision. A young man named Charles Scott put it all together. I had the idea, and I was blessed to have a few people who assisted me with reciting the poem, and then he selected the voices and what stages they would say what, and put them together with the different pictures. So I thought that was he did an awesome job, and I'm very proud of what he did, and I'm looking forward to him doing some other things for me in the future. So I thought that was a big deal, and I'll be playing it a few times and as we get along. I want to move on to another subject, and I want to play something for you all. And so I want you to listen to this, and then we want to have a discussion about why this didn't reach national news.
Officers arrest a couple in connection in the death of a grandmother and a granddaughter Sunday in Dillington, South Carolina. The quit couple, 23 and 25, have been charged with murder, are in police custody. Sheriff confirmed that the two suspects were husband and wife. Dillington County coroner found two people dead after responding to a call Sunday morning. Sheriff says the call came in around 11:54 Sunday morning for two dead people at a home off of Highway 151 near the Dillington Dragway. One of the victims is 9 years old, and the other is the child's grandmother. Hardy's identified the victims Monday morning, as coroners have ruled the incident a double homicide. Two of the mother's grandchildren were able to escape without being harmed.
What I want to kind of ask you guys, sometimes it's interesting to find out, who decides what is national news and what is not national news. And here we are, we have a grandmother and her granddaughter that is murdered in their home, and two grandchildren escape and are able to go report what has happened. But it doesn't make national news. I think this is a tremendous story where you have a white couple. We've yet to find out what the motive was for them murdering this black family. But it just seems to me, for some reason, this horrific story did not make the national news. And I just happened to find it as I do on a daily basis, just going around looking for things. And I have to tell you, I'm a little cynical, because if I believe that if a black couple had broken into a white family's home and killed a grandmother and a granddaughter, and two of the grandchildren escaped, that would have made national news. So I'm just asking, am I thinking in the right direction? RJ, what are your thoughts?
Well, you definitely are going with the trending, and I think they probably identify which stories would bring more attention based on interest and or generate conversation. And a lot of times, like I said, they would want to keep out of the news on those occasions when it's not negatively reflecting blacks. But I'm not quite sure of how they actually go about determining, you know, what actually makes national news. Because I think about that sometimes even locally, when you have to imagine every day there's going to be an accident on the interstate or on the highway, but we don't hear about every last one of those incidents. It's the ones that they think that will generate, again, a large audience. And I'm not sure. I don't have all the insight on that one.
Well, you know, I just thought that was a horrific story, that you have a grandmother who obviously was taking care of her grandchildren in the confines of her home. She wasn't out in the street anywhere. And here it is, these people break into her home and murder her and her granddaughter. And by the grace of God, two of them were able to escape. And even today, as I've gone back to try to find out what the motive was, at least they caught these two people, we still don't have any information about motive. And I'm just wondering, is this a connection with the direction our country is going in, where you have these white supremacists or people all of a sudden wanting to take out their anger on black families? Regina, what are your thoughts?
Darlington, South Carolina is a rural area, rural and industrial area. Seems though I heard something about them breaking into that house because they knew what was in that house. And that's how all of that started. But even being here in South Carolina, I knew the incident occurred that day because it just so happened that my daughter and I got lost in Darlington. And when I saw and that day we got lost. We were coming back from North Carolina, and that doggone GPS gave me a wrong turn. But the next day when I saw the story and I called her and told her that that was where we were the day before, but that's the extent of the story. I didn't hear anything else.
So we really don't know. Do you think it's connected to drugs or something, that they thought the people had money? Or, you know, usually they say home invasions, people know something about each other.
Right. I believe that she had a boyfriend who also lived there, who may not have been there at that time, and they were looking for something. That's what happened. So maybe they didn't think that it was going to shed a positive light, so they didn't make that a feature story.
Well, you know, it was definitely a horrific story. When I went over and I was looking for things that are going on in the country that we could talk about, it definitely kind of shocked me, because, you know, when you think of things, here we have a big story going on right now about a young lady who was kidnapped, and she was able to get on the phone while the perpetrator was asleep. And then they come to find out that there were two murders. He murdered two people downstairs and murdered a third, and he was what they call a serial killer. So I guess they have to pick and choose what it is that they show on the national news. And, you know, what, like Audrey mentioned, what is going to bring up the biggest conversation, and how does it impact the country as a whole? I see we have another caller on the line. 4484, do you want to give your name and where you're calling from? And we're just talking about how certain stories reach the national news and how horrific a story could be, but it doesn't get airtime.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, sir.
Okay. Yeah. If you ask me, what I think, I think that when we look at society nowadays, you gotta look. These people was doing home invasions, but you never know you say they don't have a motive, so it's obvious we don't have like a lot of facts to rely on during the case to see what was their motive. So I think it's a shame, you know. But I also think, you know, these people out here nowadays, you know, it's a criminal justice system. It's criminals that justify their system. You know what I mean? So you got criminals running around all up and through here, you know. And that don't mean that we can drop the prefix, you know what I mean? We got some white in this, we got some black in this, you know. It's black and white that's both doing evil. You know what I mean? You follow what I'm saying, my brother?
Yeah, I hear you. Now, you know something, and I just want to throw this out there to all of you. Recently, you had Giuliani talk about how African-Americans just go enraged when a police officer kills someone of color, but yet that there is a 90% or greater black-on-black crime, you know, blacks killing other blacks. But then someone brought up that, you know, one of the reasons why black-on-black crime, the percentage is high, is because people, those are the people that they live around. White-on-white crime is 80-some percent of whites kill other whites. But not very often you hear that percentage. But what would you guys say about where we are as a nation and what we need to be doing to reduce the amount of crime all over the country, irregardless of what color is doing it? We need to do something about the fact that there are 30,000 people who die every year from gun violence. And so what do we do as a nation to reduce the amount of gun violence that is happening in our country, no matter whether it's black on black or white on white? These are lives that are being lost every year at this number, which just seems to be out of control. Andre, what are your thoughts about that?
I'm sorry, repeat the last part of the question.
I just want to know what your thoughts are about the fact that we have such horrific numbers. You know, you have 90-some percent of blacks kill other blacks and 80-some percent of whites kill other whites. But as a nation, we seem to be, violence just seems to be a pastime of the way we behave.
Again, it goes back to what's being reported out. I think, like you said, crime is on the increase no matter where we are in all of our communities and all ethnic heritage and everything. We just see the increase. We know that, you know, the evil spirit is on its job. But I don't know. I think it goes back to our conversation that we've had the last couple of days. It's important for us to have dialogue, and I think once we understand that we have more in common than what we have different, that's when we can really start to appreciate people. You know, we hear all these numbers of crime and people being arrested and placed in jail, but until it actually hit home to us, someone that's a part of our family or a part of our community, someone that we know, that's when it becomes, you know, more heightened that we want to become involved. But I say before that occurs, if we'll just start having dialogue with each other and just really start to, you know, get to know each other and talk through situations and unite ourselves so that we can overcome some of these challenges, it'll be better. But the way the culture is set up now, it's biased such that we won't get a true representation of all the good that the black families and black leaders are actually doing throughout the country.
Regina, let me ask you, you know, you and I are both involved and listening to politics. Do you think what's going on in our politics right now is going to lend itself to any solution to the violence that's happening in our country, or it's going to perpetuate more violence because of the division that we have right between the races and Donald Trump and what he's bringing to the table. What do you think is going to happen as a result of this chaos we find ourselves in politically?
Well, I know that a childhood friend of mine is a senator here in South Carolina, and is Senator Marlon Kempson, and he's representing Charleston, South Carolina. And he's introduced several bills to try to extend the time that it would take for a person to purchase a handgun and some other things he's tried to introduce laws that would help to deter the criminal because it would take them too long to actually get their hands on a gun. But oddly enough, this came off, well, they started trying to introduce this bill way before the Charleston shooting. And then after that, then they really started pushing it. And Senator Clemente Pinckney's wife is going around, you know, speaking on it and saying, had these laws been in effect then, her husband would be alive now to be able to go around and try to get the laws passed. So they're having these issues with passing this law, yet they're also complaining because they're having issues with the high crime. Now, how can you talk about the high crime but don't put things in place to deter the criminals?
Well, you know, I think that part of our issue is economics. And until we're willing to invest in everybody getting an equal opportunity, one of the things we got to come to grips with is we know everybody don't want to work. But those people who really do want to work, who want a job, who want a decent opportunity to make a living, we need to be providing for them some options. Because if we provide some options in the economics that give people ability to work, then they may forego becoming a part of a criminal enterprise.
Well, I agree. And it helps when they have goals, and it also helps when they have these jobs to take them off the street, because the idle mind is the devil's workshop. So I agree with you, but until then, we still need to get these gun laws passed. Not that it's going to be a magic wand and all of these murders and things stop, but I believe it would be a deterrent if it were harder. And I also know if you want a gun, you just go right down to the nearest corner. I know that. But we've got to start somewhere.
Well, we have to give these people some options, because if you make life too hard, people are going to seek the easiest option available to them to earn a living. If we make earning a living too difficult, Audrey, you're in the workforce and work with a major corporation. You know, what are your thoughts related to economics that lends itself to creating crime?
Well, again, I agree with others that we have to take action on the gun laws that's in hand now. And while, like you said, we know in reality people go in and get guns illegally, but I do think there's a difference in our just based on economic demographics as far as the crime and the impact of the potential of what can and cannot be done. But we have to know that, I think you asked the question earlier, do we think that this aligns with some of the political issues that we are experiencing now? And I would say yes, because, again, I do think that, you know, subconsciously people send signals. And when a leader or a person that's viewed in a leadership role authorize violence and hatred and don't correct it, that's a clear indication to continue to take those actions, which in the past they would have been more hesitant to. But if they see that they can not only take actions negatively against others and demonstrate their hatred behaviors without penalty, we're going to see that increase more and more. And if we don't actually execute the gun laws, it's going to be just like going back to the Wild Wild West. It's just going to be open game. At least it has the potential to.
Yeah, we really need to pay more attention to what is, you know, it's like we have, I know that this epidemic with mosquitoes is critical, and we're getting ready and prepared to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars on this epidemic to keep it from getting to the point where too many women are impacted. But right now we're talking about less than 200 people are impacted by this disease, but yet we're ready to spend millions and millions of dollars on it. But yet we know that 30,000 people are killed each and every year, and it doesn't seem to have the same emphasis or commitment to making some changes. I want to thank all of you for calling in, and we're at the end of another show, and we're going to take this short break and come back.
Making love with you is all I wanna do. Loving you is more than just a dream come true. And everything that I do is out of love and you. Stay with me.